And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton and the surrounding area via the FM dial, as well as the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca. And as I promised, we do have Maximilian Forte, and he is a professor of anthropology at Concordia University in Montreal, and he specializes in political anthropology, media ethnographies, and the new imperialism. He's written some very interesting articles about the calls for intervention in Libya and some of the racial discourse that has surrounded that. And more recently, in Salon magazine and Monthly Review zine, he wrote an article entitled "The War in Libya: Race, Humanitarianism, and the Media." So, Max, Professor Forte, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
The article was fantastic, and it caught a lot of attention, and it just reminded people that you have a blog, and you've been actually covering this issue since March or February, as well as all of the uprisings and actions throughout the Middle East, North Africa, Central Asia. And so I think we should help people find that. In terms of your blog, you've been very active in a sort of open anthropology movement, I guess a series of discussions with academics, authors, activists. So where can people find your blog?
Okay, well, that blog that you're referring to is at zeroanthropology.net. So zeroanthropology is one word. And I'm also a founding and current member of an organization called Anthropologists for Justice and Peace. I won't read out the web address for that, but it's pretty easy to find.
That is Zero Anthropology, and that's going to be relatively easy to find. You'll see Max writes articles on quite a wide range of subjects, a lot of it to do with constructions of ethnicity, nationalism, and the kind of discourse we use here in Canada to promote various ideas. And in the case of Libya, certainly you clued in very early that there are some things going on in terms of building consent or creating certain viewpoints about intervening in Libya. And you suggested that there was, I guess, among elements of the Libyan opposition, as well as here in the West, there was what you called a racially selective xenophobia. Now, what do you mean by that?
Okay, well, clearly the Libyan opposition, and specifically part of it known as the Transitional National Council, or the TNC, has obviously indicated a preference for NATO intervention, for the intervention of the European and North American states, and so forth. So they're not xenophobic in that regard, but where they have shown a considerable amount of xenophobia, not just in terms of attitude and verbal expressions, but even in some very lethal actions, has been towards what are being referred to as Africans, which means, you know, sub-Saharan Africans, migrant workers from countries such as Chad and Niger and Ghana and Sudan, Ethiopia, and so forth. And so in that sense, it's a racially selective xenophobia, open to foreigners of one particular kind and open to foreign intervention of one particular kind, and very hostile towards this, as I said, so-called African presence.
Well, I know when I was reading newspaper coverage here in Canada on the events inside Libya, my heart almost stopped when I read the two words African mercenaries. Those two words together, I think they produce a certain reaction. What kind of effect do you think was intended by the use of that term?
No, absolutely. That's a very important point. I mean, what I think, because it's so taken for granted and so everyday and customary in our own society, we may not be really attuned, or very conscious, I should say, of the kinds of images and symbols that are being deployed here. I mean, African mercenary or Afro-merc, as some members of the Libyan opposition referred to them in places such as Twitter, you know, connotes the idea of the dangerous, the criminal, the savage. That term was also used, the savage African, as a creature of violence. Whereas on the other hand, in contrast to that, we are told by people such as Hillary Clinton, for example, that the members of the TNC are professionals, doctors, lawyers, and engineers. So it sounds like us, middle class, and by association, white. When Hillary Clinton talks about, she uses the term mercenaries, but she's only using it when referring to black Africans. She doesn't call them private security contractors. you know, the way she speaks about American white mercenaries.
And certainly there was talk by our own white mercenary firms to go into Libya. Some of these contractors were interested in taking part in that no-fly zone and boots on the ground. No one called them mercenaries.
That's right.
You mentioned the Twitter feeds. Certainly Twitter has become a tool for all sides and every struggle these days. In the case of this African mercenary story, there are some interesting tweets, and you tracked them down. I'd like to read some. I have your article here. People can see it for themselves. One of them says, "I urge the Libyan army to side with the Libyan people. Don't let these African mercs kill your family." And then there's a witness tells Al Jazeera.net, a plane full of mercenaries leaves Harare Airport in Zimbabwe headed to Libya. And finally, there's Gaddafi has given the African mercenaries full freedom in raping Libyan women. So it seems that this was very sensationalist.
Yes, that's right. Oh, and by the way, note also a couple of the things that you mentioned. They're raping our women. That's something that was repeated a few times. This notion of black men coming after our women, it sounds like white colonial speech. You could find that either in the southern United States, you could find it in the Caribbean, you could find it in Africa, and so forth. But also, that particular message about a plane load of mercenaries leaving Zimbabwe, that was actually something circulated by an Al Jazeera journalist, and her source were these anonymous Libyan Twitter users. So she would say something based on what they had alleged, and because she said it, the people who first alleged it then turned around and said, look, it's been confirmed because Al Jazeera is now saying it. So there was this game between mainstream media and social media where something unconfirmed in social media became confirmed because the mainstream media said it. So there's also that to look out for.
Yes, anonymous sources seem to be quite important in this conflict for Al Jazeera and other news organizations. I think even Al Jazeera had to back away from its hyping of that issue eventually.
Yeah, well, it did have one report by a correspondent named Jackie Rowland, which in Roland's words showed the ugly face of the Libyan revolution, and it focused on the ransacking and pillaging of the homes and businesses of sub-Saharan Africans in Benghazi, and talking about the execution of a number of them, the lynching and so forth. But that was one report, and what Al Jazeera did not talk about is how it itself helped to create this kind of racialized hysteria around African mercenaries in Libya.
Well, that's how you began your article, with various news reports on what was happening to African migrants and black Libyans after this sort of coverage. People were being basically thrown into prison, and on the basis of what, their ethnicity, they were accused of being mercenaries?
Well, on the basis, well, first of all, of their appearance, and then their ID cards, and their ID cards would merely show that they were citizens of other African nations. In some cases, the fact that they had those ID cards and could not speak Arabic or could not speak it very well, that was the standard of proof that these people, you know, must be mercenaries rather than foreign workers.
Well, I think you mentioned an incident where there was video footage of people in construction hats, yellow construction hats, and they were portrayed as mercenaries.
Yes.
And was there evidence to suggest that they were engaged in combat attacking civilians and such forth?
You know, and there was that particular video, which was, I saw it myself on CNN first before I encountered it being reproduced across various social media sites and blogs and so on. So I saw it first in a mainstream media source. And when you look at it carefully, especially with the sound turned off, because there are certain effects that have been put into that video clip, such as the effect of having a lot of women screaming, which makes you feel alarmed, and you feel like, oh my God, something terrible is happening here. You look at it without the sound, and calmly, and you see people who are construction workers, and they're armed with sticks. And there's a few of them. It's not clear who they're beating. It's not clear if they're being beaten because they're also running around. There are also security forces there in uniform with weapons and so on. So you don't see any evidence of anyone being killed. You don't hear any kind of gunfire. And if this was supposed to be evidence of, you know, the mercenaries are massacring all the people of Libya, it obviously didn't offer any of that. It offered sensationalism, alarm. It was very suggestive and so on. But I don't know what kind of mercenaries, what kind of mercenary uniform it is to have a yellow safety hat and a stick.
Shades of Grenada, remember, when the U.S. and back in 83, I think it was,
right.
They got in those firefights with the Cubans, construction workers. They said they were the Cuban army. I mean, it's not...
Yeah, exactly.
It reminds me of that other tweet you pointed out, and that was another Twitter from the, I guess, some opposition sources. They said, African mercenaries now in Benghazi. Sources in Libya say they're chasing and killing people with knives and swords. That's quite extraordinary and different than what we've been presented with in the videos, I think.
Yeah, but you know, there is something really critical about what you just mentioned there, because Human Rights Watch, and it's important to note that Human Rights Watch has actually supported the foreign military intervention that is occurring. I mean, it called for intervention itself. So it's not like Human Rights Watch has any kind of axe to grind for Gaddafi. Human Rights Watch had an investigative group in eastern Libya and in Benghazi, and they reported formally they found absolutely no evidence whatsoever of African mercenaries in eastern Libya.
You know,
that is a critical finding. It gets seriously downplayed. Even try looking that up on the web. You can find it on Human Rights Watch and maybe a couple of other sites, and that's about it.
It's probably difficult to get into Libya, especially once an intervention has happened in a no-fly zone. There's a lot of desert and borders and ocean. A lot of the Twitter coverage you mentioned focused on the airports. And
yeah.
I think, you know, you're suggesting a couple things here. First of all, that there was a sort of nationalism being created, that it was us Libyans versus these African mercenaries, these foreigners. And in a sense, it was Gaddafi versus Libya, and you know, those Africans were Gaddafi's Africans, so it was the sense of a rebel nationhood, and it's tied to the concept of an airports and a no-fly zone. So we need a no-fly zone, we need those safe NATO planes to help us to prevent those African mercenaries from being imported through the airports.
Yes, that's exactly right, and from very, very early on, and I mean the first days of the protests that started in mid-February, a lot of the messages that were being put out by these pro-opposition websites that incidentally were created just in time for the protests, they have no history before February 15th. A lot of these sites that were spreading a dual message, you know, mercenaries are coming in by air and we need a no-fly zone. The two things were connected at that time. So the earliest calls for a no-fly zone and for so-called humanitarian intervention had that racial angle from early on.
I remember on March 2nd, we had an interview and we were talking about some of those claims we had seen, just listening to CBC Radio News, looking at some newspaper articles. You hear these cries from some members of the opposition who said, we need NATO aircraft to help us. We don't need soldiers or boots on the ground, but it would be nice if there are some airstrikes to kill Gaddafi, kind of like what we're hearing now from John McCain, that there should be these airstrikes on Gaddafi. So that was happening. We don't, you know, until February, we don't hear about this. We don't know too much about the leadership, but, I mean, we've heard about what General Hifter or whatever this guy is from the U.S. and some of these other people. But, of course, a lot of the opposition domestically it seemed to come from Gaddafi's party or Gaddafi's government, the former government members. And there might have been some splits in the regime. Now, we're not sure about this, but your article indicated there had been some divisions within the Libyan government on a number of issues, and one of them was African migrants, I believe.
Yes, that's right. I mean, there was evidence from early on from the huge sort of race riots that occurred in Libya in the year 2000 that different elements of the Libyan government were saying and doing very different things. There was the acknowledgement on the ground that some members of the Libyan security forces were assisting ordinary Libyan civilians in targeting and attacking African migrant workers. But on the other hand, there were other elements of the regime, such as Gaddafi himself, who denounced the violence and who fired his justice minister and so forth. So all I'm saying is, without knowing conclusively anything, that this is suggestive of the possibility that from early on there were divisions in the regime itself around this issue of the black African presence in Libya. And some of the most outspoken regime members in 2000 who denounced the Africans as a burden on health care, as being, you know, vectors spreading disease and crime and so forth. One of them in particular is now the top leader of the Transitional National Council.
Yeah, it sounds like Gaddafi had taken some flack from his own government on some of that. I guess some of these voices are now rising to the leadership in the opposition. Yeah,
that's right.
Well, now it's come down to us in NATO. I mean, Canada is leading this attack now, this NATO attack. You know, there's an election going on. There's not a whole lot of discussion about it, but we're taking quite a role. We've decided that we want to be a big partner in this. Sorry about that crackling. We just have a bit of a phone line issue.
That's okay.
Canada's taken a big leadership role. We've always been big on the responsibility to protect. That's been very big here in Canada. The way we justified that intervention, this massacre in Benghazi, we had to protect the people. You know, we have to save Benghazi. We had to save the Kuwaiti incubator babies. We have to save women from the Taliban. I mean, how many people do we have to save?
No, but that's an important point. This is a very long-standing practice. And, as a matter of fact, if I really wanted to put a sharp point on this, I could mention the fact that Adolf Hitler himself claimed humanitarian concerns and the protection of human rights for invading Czechoslovakia. So almost every character has been able to use the humanitarian justification. But then again, what is so humanitarian about prolonging a war in which civilians die is something that's quite beyond me, and apparently it's beyond a lot of the people self-identified as liberal who justify and who support this kind of intervention.
That's right. If you read the U.S. press and the U.S. media right now, a lot of people are wondering, how come this is not over yet? How come it's taking so long? How come this is going on for weeks and weeks and weeks? It seems that more people are dying now because of this prolonged civil war than massacres that people would have expected. So,
that's right.
You know, they say, first, do no harm. And we chose to ignore that idea. And we have done harm in Libya. Well, I guess it's about time to wrap up. But I guess we have a few issues that we'll have to follow up on. I mean, there's this whole "we have to do something" brigade, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that lady on The Simpsons, you know, "won't somebody please think of the children?" You know?
Exactly.
You know, they say Libyans want democracy, and I guess what they mean by that is Western democracy. So we might have to take a look into that as to what are people calling for in Libya and elsewhere. Are they calling for Western democracy? Are they calling for U.S.-style democracy? I think that's an issue that you've clued into very well. So we'll have to catch up on that.
Sure.
But this is wonderful. We should remind people, your article was published in Salon and Monthly Review Zine. What day was that? I think it was around...
I think it was the 20th of April that it appeared.
Okay, so close to April 20. And your blog and your articles and analysis are available partly on Zero Anthropology.
ZeroAnthropology.net.
ZeroAnthropology.net. Okay, well, we're going to have to follow up on this and hear from you one way or another, but it's spectacular coverage, spectacular analysis you've been doing. A lot of people were just letting things sail over their head in terms of not verifying Twitter feeds, not verifying reports, not analyzing videos. No one was doing their job. You were doing your job, and we thank you very much for that.
Well, thank you very much. It was a real pleasure being on with you.
And it was a pleasure hearing from you. Thanks so much, Professor Forte.
Thanks.
And that was Maximilian Forte. Again, he is the author of the article, "The War in Libya, Race, Humanitarianism, and the Media." And that was available in Monthly Review Zine. So you can go to the internet, Google MR, that's like Mr., MR Zine. It's kind of like typing in Mr. Zine. You can find similar articles. That site refreshes and updates itself very regularly. But you can also check Salon. And if you want to get Maximilian Forte's articles for sure, just go search Zero Anthropology. And by the way, he's been doing spectacular coverage on these sort of things all the way back to Iran and the elections in 2009 and before that, working with other academics and professionals on a variety of issues. So you can get top-notch, spectacular coverage at the Zero Anthropology webzine, and we may be hearing more from that as well.